My name is Jordan Smith. I'm a Mohawk of the Bear Clan. I work at Old Fort Niagara here on the mouth of the Lower Niagara River into the beautiful Lake Ontario.
Tell us about the nature of your work. What do you do here?
So here at the fort, I'm involved heavily with the Native education and history aspect of what we plan to portray here at Fort Niagara. Being Mohawk myself, it kind of makes it a little easier and more historically accurate as well to do that. It gives us a perspective from the Native people themselves to tell our own side of history. Would also coincide and exist right along at the same time and is relative to the history here at Fort Niagara that takes place.
Talk a little bit about the significance of Fort Niagara and just this area in particular, specifically as it relates to Indigenous people and Iroquois people.
So these Great Lakes, I mean, the rivers, these creeks, these streams, they have all this beautiful abundance of Junhequa, of sustenance in them. So to be able to harvest these lakes and these waterways by fishing, by netting, by spearing, however you choose to do so, there's so much life that, you know, many Indigenous people, not just the Haudenosaunee, but many Native people from all over the Great Lakes came and would utilize these waters. So it was important as far as a livelihood and to feed your family, which is one of the most important things that, you know, the Ongwehonwe man could do is to be able to feed your family. But also it kind of brought people here together to kind of coexist. Because it wasn't always war. We always think, you know, with Native people that we're always at war with the relationship between the, you know, Europeans and Natives were fighting. And it wasn't like that. So for the Native, it was a lot of, I don't want to say camaraderie, but a lot of an understanding of who had the rights to fish in whatever rivers and waters and streams. So for the Native people, very, very important. For the development of, I say, the continent here, it's also very important because anything that's coming and going out of the country here at Fort Niagara at one point in history is you know, you control that, then you control all of the exporting and the importing of the goods because you have to come down Lake Ontario to Niagara to get to the upper Great Lakes.
And can you talk more about just the period of time of, you know, of conquest of the French and English and other settlers from Europe coming here? I mean, you know, what was the major impact that had on Indigenous peoples?
Okay, so as soon as, you know, Europeans started coming over here, a lot of the story is that, you know, those firearms is what we were always after. But that was only because we needed to defend ourselves against them. So the first time we had seen a firearm, they were used, you know, we were on the wrong end of that. That side of the stick there. But also, we kind of became dependent on a lot of the goods, a lot of the materials, because they were changing our lifestyles pretty drastically. So as far as me, you know, having a clay pot, I drop it and it breaks into 1,000 pieces, I can now trade for a brass kettle. But also the social structure in our communities are affected by this because our younger generations aren't learning that knowledge of how to make that clay pot, of how to go and find those elements needed to make it so we can use it for cooking. So there's this, like, master-apprentice systemship that kind of, you know, takes a hit. And because we are at one point in history, you know, just on the tail end here that we portray at Fort Niagara, we're just on the tail end of leaving our extended family homes and coming into, you know, more nuclear singular households. So even our structure is changing as the goods and as our lifestyles are getting easier. That's what I like to say, because we're trading for goods to make our life easier. You know, that's coming along and changing our social structure as well.
And can you talk about, you know, I notice you're wearing a red coat. Can you talk more about, you know, the role that you're portraying, the person that you're portraying here at the fort, and also more generally the role that Haudenosaunee people played during the War of Independence?
So what I have on is it's an officer's coat for the British. And the reason I'm wearing it is you quite often would see some of these, you know, prominent Mohawk war captains. They're given the finer things. And I thought because this is a, you know, event where I could break out a nice coat and let all these other, you know, soldiers know that I'm of importance, I figured it would be a good opportunity to do so. However, that doesn't mean that, you know, that's not going to carry over. So it's also a way for me to gain, I guess you could say, some of that medicine that soldier would carry with this jacket. Because they're going to give this officer the jacket It's going to be, he's going to be, you know, in control of warriors himself. So from a warrior aspect, we want to gain some of that power, some of that strength, some of that knowledge, some of that medicine. And some of the ways that we do it is sometimes through the things that we wear. A lot of the things that we're wearing that cross over from European culture is being utilized in our culture in a different aspect. From the, you know, piercings that I am wearing in my ears and in my nose to, you know, the strap and the knife and the style of the clothing that I have on itself. So the Haudenosaunee, we really play a big part in all these conflicts that take place as well. The Mohawks, really, the reason I have the red coat is because the majority, not all of us, but a lot of the Mohawks side with the British during these conflicts. During the American Revolution, our confederacy of Six Nations gets split up. The majority trying to stay as neutral as they can. The Mohawks, relatively and you know, most predominantly known to fight alongside the British again. However, we're also fighting Seneca people, and we're fighting Onondaga people, and Tuscarora people, and Oneida people. So we're kind of engulfed in this civil war that's going on. And really, it's so we can kind of maintain a territory of our own still. So we're still kind of, after the French and Indian War even, we're still fighting to keep, you know, keep the space for ourselves here in the country. And it kind of, I guess, is perspective whether you want to call the loyalists here, especially this weekend for the Revolutionary War, the loyalists fighting alongside the natives, they're all forced out of their homes. You know, so it's kind of the same thing that we can relate to today, where others are coming from someplace else and they want to live here, and people still have an issue with that. So I don't think it's changed too much. You know.
Yeah, and it appears to me that this was a major refugee crisis during that war, with, as you're saying, so many people, loyalists and Haudenosaunee people and others, being displaced from their homes. So what was that like here for them, trying to survive?
So when this takes place, Clinton and Sullivan come through northern Pennsylvania, through central New York, and, you know, burn everything as far as anything that can sustain life. So all the crops get burned down, the orchards, all the wild fruit, I guess you could call them, the berries and things like that, anything that could sustain life was burned down. But they're also noticing that you know, in these homes that they're burning, in these villages, that some of them are furnished pretty well. And there's, you know, glass windows in the windows, and they're put together as you know, a little more sophisticated than what a lot of them thought they were coming into. You know, the Revolutionary War is really, and after that, the refugee crisis that takes place, it's really this big group of everybody that got pushed out, not just Native people, but your loyalists as well, and anybody else in between that didn't want to pick a side. You're kind of forced. So when they're being displaced here, you know, you really had what you could carry on your back. So if you're a mother with children, then you brought your children with you, and that's what you had, other than the clothes on your back. Us as men, chances are we would probably try to grab what we could, but if things are, you know, burning to the ground, you're going to get away from black powder and things like that as quick as you can, because, you know, that's not good news when it goes off. So, again, we're going to come here with basically what we can, and the things that's going to sustain us is what we can find on the trail in the wild while we're walking here. You know, root vegetables, wild berries. And you got to think, this is towards the end of, you know, the year that this is taking place. So you have this refugee camp that comes here at Fort Niagara, numbered in like 10,000. And they're literally barely enough food here for the garrison. So even though the natives, specifically the Haudenosaunee, even though they didn't have all kinds of access to food, they still kind of maintained. But also they still utilized that reason to go back out on the raid and on the war party and regroup with those people that they had met all on that same refugee camp. So quite often they're going out with the Butler's Rangers, you know, in numbers of 2,000 heading out into the frontier, and they're breaking up into smaller little contingents and smaller war parties, and they're just kind of, you know, raiding the frontier, kind of giving it back to the Continental Army there.
One last question I want to ask. So the war ends, the British are defeated by those that rose up against them. What does this mean for Haudenosaunee people at that time?
So the Haudenosaunee is definitely, from that time, they really get placed where they're at now today in New York State. So there's various reservations throughout New York State and Southern Ontario. So the Haudenosaunee, our main areas of home even to this day, our residents here, really within our boundaries of our original territory. There are some Senecas and Cayugas that traveled to Oklahoma during the Indian removal and all that. There's some Oneidas that travel out to Green Bay, Wisconsin as well. And even some Mohawks, what I hear, making their way to British Columbia. So, you know, for all this strife to take place, but still for those people to be spread across the territory still, it's just, I think it's one of the main things that takes place from that, that I guess the side we chose in the war there.
Is there anything I missed? Anything you'd like to add?
No, I just like to maybe say that the Haudenosaunee were the original inhabitants of Turtle Island here or North America, were also the original United Nations, the first form of democracy on this continent. And we're often referred to as the way we discussed our issues and held council as the Romans did. So we're pretty elegant, and we still utilize all of that old terminology, that old language, and those old customs are still alive to this day. We're one of the only still traditional forms of native government here within the North American continent, and we've been governing ourselves that way since before the Europeans came here to settle this beautiful area.